I'm a monk named John. No, it's a program of honesty. I'm an addict named John. Thanks for having me tonight. It's always an honor, scary honor sometimes, but it's always an honor to do anything in service for Narcotics Anonymous has done so much for me. Cool costumes I'm seeing here tonight. I can remember being a kid on Halloween and loving just getting dressed up and more so loving getting the candy and probably even more so than now, like taking all my sister's candy. Because one was never enough for me, you know, a thousand was too, you know. So, anyway, I love everything that this area is about. This was the first area that put on the retreat that I went to the first time. It was in 2009. The journey continues up at Camp Harmony. And, you know, I got a real taste for how to reach out, you know. It was a cool experience for me, and I've always felt really in touch with people from this area. So thanks again for having me tonight. I guess this is the time when I'm going to tell you about what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like today. I'd like to keep it real short and say, like, what it was like. It was slavery. How I got here was a lot of pain and desperation, and what it's like today is I have freedom. And that's what was told was given to me if I worked this program, you know. And that's been my experience. There's been some ups and downs throughout my recovery. And I think most recently what I'm going through is, like, not my own spiritual pain. Like, I'm starting to feel other people's. I know I can't own anyone else's, what they're going through, but... Like, there was a time in my life I couldn't experience anyone else's in any empathetic way. So I'm glad to be able to do that today and lend a hand. And I know that's part of the solution I've been given, too, here is to help people out without hurting myself, too, in the meantime. So, Halloween's one of the coolest times of the year. I actually like fall. My girlfriend hates it. She thinks, you know, it's like that's 6 months of snow, and I was verified by me, or on the news anyway, they said we're going to get snow for like 6 months. Not to be a bummer here, but like that's what happens this time of year around here. But it's a refreshing thing. That's why I like the seasons. I lived in San Diego for a couple of years, and quite honestly, I become bored pretty quickly, and it was nice weather, and you might say, oh, that's crazy. Things like that. There was nice weather, and when it rained or something like that, or I'd go up to the mountains and see some snow, it was like a refreshing thing. So as much as I, as an addict, I like things to be expected and normal and those kind of things, things I can know what's going to happen next. I like change, too. I like the unknown, too. I'm going to keep this brief tonight because I know most of you came here to dance, not hear me. I can see by your cool-ass costumes. So, I told you I'd tell you what it was like. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. I think a lot of people know what we went through, but I think it's important to share that part of my journey too, and how it all started. I'm a middle child of three. I have two sisters. One is 4 years older, one is a year younger. I always kind of felt like when my younger sister was born, the attention was taken off of me and to her, and I always wanted to be like my older sister. So that's the way it was throughout my childhood. I always wanted more things that I liked, you know, and I think that's sort of normal. But, like, it didn't matter whether it was good for me or bad for me. I wanted it, you know, and... Like, I can remember the first time I ever, I don't think it was, intentions were to get high, but, like, I remember the first time I ever, like, took a bunch of pills. I was, like, probably 4 years old. It was little orange-flavored aspirins, you know. And I just ate them, ate them, ate them, and I can remember my mother sticking her fingers down my throat. And, like, God, it was ugly, but, you know. The next time she had a bottle, I was always looking for it. I don't know why. That's just like, that was in me from early, early, early on. Like I said, with the candy, I was wanting everybody else's and mine. So I really didn't think, like, there'd be enough to go around. I always thought there was never enough. So I moved on through, you know, I started experimenting, I guess with alcohol first. I don't know if a lot of people probably start that way, but like my parents kept a little bit around. I liked things, you know, my curiosity always got the best of me. Like my dad used to buy this beer called Michelob, and it had a weird bottle, like a shape to it. And I was like, was intrigued by that, you know, so I was like, snuck one or two, you know, and I'm talking at like 10 years old, take a couple of those, and then I got introduced to marijuana like around 6th grade, 12 years old, because I wanted to, like I said earlier, be like my older sister, Susan, is her name, and she was about 16 at the time, and I grew up in the 60s, and like I knew that like having a little wee bit of a weed made me feel powerful. Not that I so much liked the buzz from it, but I liked the control and power I felt like I had over other people when I had something they wanted as well as I wanted. I went on and progressed through high school, moved a lot, went through changed high schools in 7th grade. It was kind of traumatizing. We came from a real conservative area around here to not such a like a diverse area, but it was a little more diverse in 7th grade when we started high school back then, and or junior high, we called it. And that was my first experience of like change like that. But I like what I found out early was is I always took, and looking back on it, I always took me with me, you know, that didn't change. I still wanted to find people that were experimenting with drinking their dad's beer or drinking their dad's liquor or mom and dad's liquor or the weed, you know. So I found those people pretty quickly, you know. I got my mother is has a doctorate in education. I'll say that to brag. It was actually quite hard for me as a kid to think that I could meet or exceed those standards. But, like, for some reason, I've never felt like I could be good enough. And whenever I would go to school, my sisters were doing pretty well, and I would always be up at the principal's office. I can remember in 7th and 8th grade, like, bringing, like, stuff to music class and provoking the music teacher. I didn't care how I got out of school. Class, it could be paddling. Back then we paddled kids, and like I can remember one time I brought the Rolling Stones album because on music day once a month they'd let you do that. It was Goat's Head Soup, and we played Star Star, and I don't know if anybody older in here knows the way that song goes, but my music teacher didn't appreciate it. It was like star fuck a star fuck. So anyway, it was like a routine. It was expected. And outside, get paddled down to the office, and like it was like that vicious cycle. But I got out of what I felt like I was in control, and that's all I really wanted. Meanwhile, I was finding like my life was more out of control every time, every day. I got shipped away to a boarding school in 9th grade. I lost touch with people. It was an all boys boarding school. It was fine, not for me. And the weird thing is like I think addicts are most resourceful and curious and inventive people there are, and intelligent. We're so smart we get ourselves in trouble all the time, thinking we can control everything. Like I went to 9th grade at this. It was a pretty. It wasn't like a military school. It was a prestigious boys' school. And I got like straight A's and did really well. And like everybody was amazed that I could do that. But I didn't want to be there, so I manipulated my way out. I said, you know, I'm going to be like this when I get back to public school. As soon as I got back to public school, havoc, you know. I'm not going to sit up here and say that, like, that was a good experience for me going to 9th grade. It was just something that I had to share. And I know that, like, I just want people to know that, like, whenever I go somewhere, I take me with me, you know. I know I am a product of my environment, though, you know. Like, I don't hang around with old people, places, and things, friends, you know, expecting to stay clean. I will say, meet me in a meeting, you know, if they come, that's cool, you know. that seed was planted by friends of mine that are still out there. So I feel like I owe that to them too. Where was I? I went on to, like I said earlier, I lived in San Diego after I got out of high school, barely squeaking by. I lived in Tennessee for a year and graduated. I moved down there with my dad. It went crazy because the drinking age was 18 and I was able to sneak by and get stuff. And it was just, that's when I first experienced like being really thrown in jail overnight. I was in high school doing Quaaludes and a friend of mine, associate, you know, came down. He was in the Army at the time and I was in my senior year in high school. He came down to where I was living in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And I ended up driving up onto somebody's lawn, and the cops came, and since he was in the Army, they let him drive my car, or my pickup truck, home to my house, or my dad's house, and took me to jail overnight. And, you know, that was kind of screwed up. And then I ran away. It was like 2 weeks left in high school. I quit high school. So I had to go back and make that time up. So, and I did graduate. Throughout high school, I started experimenting with other, you know, drugs, cocaine, things like that. I don't know, like, there's some drugs out there that I haven't tried. I know I don't have to. You know, I've been told, like, I can take someone's experience in here and they can tell me. My own experience with relapse and things like that have been, like, I could try something new, but it always leads me back to the bad spot I was in before I got here. So I don't have to do that today. Now I went to college, came out of college, and I got a pretty good job. I was working for a big insurance company and doing pretty well money-wise, you know, not topping the charts, but doing really well for 6 or 7 years. And you know, I met a girl, and we had a child who's my daughter right now. Is 23. She lives with me. I have custody of her. Anyhow, we bought a home together. I was always the freak. You know, when we'd go away on conferences, you work for insurance companies, they send you away once a year. It's all figured into your premiums. conferences and things like that. And I'd be in trouble, you know, like making an ass out of myself. I was always that person that was like trying to fit in, but always ended up feeling like the stooge, you know, that I really didn't want to be and wondering what happened. So I couldn't hold on to relationships. Big part of my story is like trying to like befriend or be with another person that would help me out the way I'd like to help them out, and we'd help each other out, you know. But they always ended up sick because I didn't know how to take care of myself. I've learned in here, like, like I can't take care of someone else without doing that first. That was a foreign concept to me before I got here. My clean date, I didn't mention that, but it's June 7th, 2010. If you don't know yours, I've been told here, remember it because you'll get a new one if you don't. But that's it. It's June 7th, 2010. It wasn't my first attempt, but that's what it's been. I've like 1,608 days. I don't say that to brag. I say that because each day is a blessing to me. I mean, it's a miracle and it's a gift, being where I came from. I was a little bit off my square when I came in because I was 47 years old. I'm 52, and I was scared, man. I came in with my daughter, who was 17, my older daughter, and she was like my crutch. You know, I came out of rehab and came into a meeting, and she was there for me. I guess that's enough about my using. We all know how to use. So I'm going to talk from that point, you know, how I got here. A little bit backing up, though, like before I went into rehab, I pulled some real bad stuff, carjackings and stuff like that, and I felt really like, oh, I'm going to end up back up in jail again. Throughout my course of using, I ended up in there like 5 times, short-term stuff, in and out. So I didn't want to do that again, and my relationship, this was the third one that I was in a male-female relationship, buying a house, all that stuff. was really, like, really sick. And I needed out. And at this time, I didn't mention I have a younger daughter who's 17 now. She was 11 at the time. And, you know, we were just, like, really going downhill, you know. I couldn't talk with them. I was trying to be their friend, you know, partying buddy, all that stuff, you know, like, my addiction had me believing, like, if I would party with them and let them party and be the cool dad, like, they would, like, tell me everything that's going on in their lives. That's bullshit, you know? Or they'd be safer if they were at my house doing what they were going to do that wasn't right, you know? And, like, I would rather have them here than out there. I've learned here, too, like, I had to create some boundaries even with that. When I got out of rehab, I was like, it's not cool to have my 17-year-old or my 11-year-old daughter using, not that my 11-year-old was using, but my 17-year-old was experimenting and stuff around me, you know, so I had to draw the line with that. When I was going into, back to the day of desperation, I was sitting on the bed with where the pain met, like, the desire to change. I was sitting on a bed out of dope, out of ways and means, out of friends. Because, like, I had been that guy, you know, called me up when I had a pile of dope and I was dope sick. I couldn't get you. Oh, man, do you have anything? I would lie sitting there looking at it, you know. I don't know if anybody else can relate to that experience or identify with that, but that was me because I was always afraid of running out, just like the Halloween candy. So, and I was sitting there out of everything. My friends were, like, I had no friends or associates anymore that would even talk to me and or take my calls. I was just like, my phone would die trying to call out to people. Even the dope man wouldn't want to hear from me anymore. And I'm sitting there, like, it's like probably another week before I go to the doctor to get those, you know, that little supplement. And my bed's all burnt up, and I'm just, like, desperate, just with my hands in my face, you know. Or my face and my hands, and my 11-year-old daughter goes, "What's wrong, Dad?" You know, and I wanted to, you know, she knew, like, there was marks on my body that proved that there was stuff wrong with me. She could see the grayness in my skin and my face, and I said, I wanted to tell her the whole story, but, like, I think God intervened right then, and all I said to her was, "Dad's sick, and I need to get help." And that was, like, the turning point for me. And that was actually June 28th, 2009, a year before my clean date. So I went to a rehab center, and I spent about 2.5 weeks there. And I came out still feeling sick, but I was clean, I guess, considerably, sweating. I had done some drugs that go into your bones and don't come out for a long time, and I don't know if it's easier or harder when you're older or younger. It doesn't matter to me, but I was sick. But I took some footwork and went to a meeting the very first day out. It was July 15th of 2009. It was Hugs Instead of Drugs. It was my home group for about a year and a half. And they met me with open arms and hugs and love, you know. And I didn't. And this is when I took my daughter, 17, with me. And, you know, and I cracked that joke, you know, I'm allergic to drugs. I break in handcuffs whenever I use them, you know. Heard that one in rehab. And then somebody in the meeting says, "Hey, you know what? We aren't about jokes here. This is life and death." And, you know, and I took that as an insult, like a criticism. But today I look at it like it's the reality of what I'm dealing with, or we're dealing with on a daily basis, you know. In fact, I get high, we stay clean. I'm so reliant and so grateful that people came tonight and keep coming back, you know. That's what was told of me. So I got to that meeting, and I started going to meetings for about 2.5 weeks. Now we're about, a little over a month since I used. And my girlfriend at the time was like, "Hey, man, like, you've been going to these things for a month. When are you going to be all better?" I'm like, "I don't think it's going to be for a while." You know, she's, like, getting really in my grill. And, like, I tried to create boundaries, you know, and it didn't really work out real well. And I felt a lot of guilt and shame. bailing on that relationship, and I had a sponsor. Fortunately, I got a sponsor. Fifth person I asked, by the way, if you don't have a sponsor, and the first person says no, keep asking. Somebody will say yes. And I believe that that sponsor was put in my life for a really, really particular reason. The most important thing I got from my sponsor was love and caring and spirituality back, which is what I lacked the most, you know. But so anyhow, I forgot where I was at. Pause for a second here. I got the sponsor. Forgot where I was at. What? Sorry. Let's just pick it up where it looks like God intervened here. Come on. Help me out. Carry the message. Anyhow, I went to Hugs Instead of Drugs. I was doing these meetings, and I had to leave. My sponsor was like, you know, are you guys helping each other or killing each other? And really, when I really looked at it, like, I wasn't allowing her to hit her spiritual bottom or anything like that by hanging around and co-signing each other's bull crap. So I left. I didn't leave her like with a bunch of extra bills or anything like that, but I left her with the house and the mortgage, and I said, you know what, look, let's just leave this house. We don't need it. You get an apartment, I'm moving out, you know. And I had to do that for me. And I think if I'd have still stuck around, we'd both be dead today. Just so happens, to the best of my knowledge, she's still alive today, and it's 5 years later. So I attribute that to, like, having faith and courage, like, getting out of that situation, allowing her to grow her own way. So anyway, enough on that. So that's how I got here. And when I left for rehab, too, I should mention this. I cried like a baby when my mother and my sister hauled me in the car. And I thought, oh, I'm going to miss my girlfriend. I'm going to miss my kids. Looking back on it now, I know exactly what it was. I was saying goodbye to my best friend, my dope. You know, that's what it really was. It was all about that, you know. And it was a really sad time. I mean, bad time in my life. But at the same time, it was a beautiful time because it was like I had an awareness that I needed to change. And so that was cool. So anyhow, went on with the... I found a good sponsor, and then I developed a we. And that's like not just a word we throw around here. It's like we have to develop new associations. And I looked for people that were going to meetings regularly and living spiritually as they could. You know, I mean, we all make mistakes and blunder, but I mean, best they could. And actually, I looked for people that would allow me into their lives, you know, because I wasn't exactly Mr. like, hey, buddy, I wasn't like Mr. like everybody was inviting me. As I said earlier, I couldn't get somebody to answer my phone calls. So, like, somebody allowing me into their life was a miracle, too. And I'm glad that they opened armed me that way, you know, held on to me. I was in outpatient rehab for a while, you know, for like 3 months. I continued on with that. I didn't go AMA or didn't try and manipulate my way out of it. I went through some struggles with that. That's where I learned to let people be where they're at, you know, because I saw people that came in before me that were relapsing and using. I was like judging and stuff, and my sponsor was like, hey, man, everybody's going to be where they're at, you know. You just have to focus on your own. How does this affect you and your recovery? That's what you have to look at, John. That's what he said. And he's struggling today, you know, but I'm there for him too, you know. He didn't relapse, but he has some other spiritual struggles, emotional things going on. So I'm able to give back in that way, so I'm blessed that way too. But yeah, I got a wee. He's not here, I don't think, tonight. I thought he might come up, but Jim T., he invited me over to his house, and it was a place to go. Like, when I left my house, I was, like, with my girlfriend and everything, I didn't know where to go. I mean, I wasn't in any condition to really sit and talk to my mother very much. It was like, because she was the one I dumped on the most. I don't know about anybody else, but, like, I, as an addict, when I was in active addiction, right out, fresh out of rehab, and still insane. I was still flipping out a lot on the people that cared about me the most and got and prayed my way into this. So, I'm grateful that I had some people that, in NA that allowed me to be part of their lives. So, and it gave me a chance to get out and do some things for others too. Like I helped him do some work on his monster truck and a little work on his house. And my addiction in the back of my head's going, like, I'm doing all this for free. You know what? I was getting more than a dollar. I was getting, like, another day clean. And I look back on that as, like, so cool today. I don't really, ask people to help me out, like, without giving them a couple bucks because I feel like, you know, our time is worth something. But, like, you know what? When people ask me to do anything for Narcotics Anonymous or people in Narcotics Anonymous ask me to help them out, I try and do it if I can. I really do. I don't like second guess the ability, you know, or where I came from. And that brings me up to, like, Jim T was the one that took me to the first retreat that this area puts on. And the cool thing about that retreat was, it was scary for me, but the cool thing was, is like that particular retreat, they gave out these little cards like it was our readings. And I was wondering, I didn't even know what they were. I had like 2 months clean. It was in August, and I got clean in June of 2009. And there was these little cards that, you know, the 12 traditions and just for today and all those readings. And we were to go around, we all got the same reading. We were to go around and meet other people, new people, and exchange cards and get a full set. It was a really, really cool way to get out and meet new people in recovery. So, or meet others in recovery. So, that was cool. So, and I can remember that particular retreat was where my sponsor told me, you know, we were sitting there like the day and a half into it. He says, I think I'll be your sponsor. And I'm like, I had completely forgot, you know, because I was building this trust and relationship with this guy that he agreed to be my temporary sponsor. And I was like, well, we're all temporary, really. But, you know, and he was like, yeah, I think this is working out. I think we should continue this and I'll sponsor you. And I'm like, cool, you know. So, I really, you know, I can remember that retreat. I can remember him snoring his ass off in the tent and thinking, you know, this snoring guy isn't annoying me. It's music to my ears. I can remember starting to feel some things that way. I can remember people that are in these rooms tonight right here being there and, like, being willing to give me an ear, you know, or lend me some guidance. One of the things I try to do when I tell this to my sponsees today, who I have a couple that are working a program, and one of them's here tonight. And I tell them, you know, when we go somewhere new, and I'm going to remind them now, get a number from somebody you don't know in NA, you know, from out of our area. Get a number, just one. Don't push it, like, you know, because we all want to do like a million of them, and then forget about it for a year. Just get a number, one number, and try and use it, you know. I used to do that, too, in active addiction as far as, like, want to take care of everything all at once and then relax, breathe, you know. I used to have these lists 20 things long, you know. Look like the traditions, you know. And, like, to do each day, and then I'd be disappointed whenever I didn't do it. People in my way said, you know, said, hey, why don't you use a Post-it notepad and write three things on there and make, you know, important things to do each day. And then when you get those things done, be okay. Because if you didn't destruct anything or use or steal from somebody, it's already a better day, you know. And I did that. I started carrying a note, I bought a little thing on Post-it notepad and I write on there, you know. And it worked, you know. I was, like, happy with getting a couple of things done. And it snowballed into, like, an iPhone. But anyway, yeah, the process of recovery, like, I work steps. I've actually worked through all the steps one time. I notice I'm going to keep continuing to work steps. And, you know, it's a cool thing. I need to get to work on doing some serious work on some traditions and concepts. But we've got a plan with that. I'm actually going to work some of that stuff with guys that I sponsor. We're going to do it in a group atmosphere some way. And you know what? As I said earlier, I don't want to really make this thing a long, dragged-out thing. I'm so happy to be here tonight. You know, I was going to come up in my old pickup truck. I thought, oh, I'm going to drive the truck up over the mountain. It was due for inspection yesterday, and I called my mechanic at noon. I said, hey, can you get me in? He's like, why do you do this to me? You know, well, I got it over there, and he inspected it, and it passed and everything. And today, I'm driving to H&I, commitment that I have. I'm the panel coordinator for the prison in Greensburg, and I have to do the report for that. And my check engine light came on. I'm thinking, ooh, I got one over on that one, you know. But I'm on my way home from the meeting, and then all the lights go out in the truck. I'm like, well, that was probably God working for me, you know, more so than me getting over. Like, it taught me, like, maybe you should leave that old truck at home and drive the newer car to the meeting. You know, is that where you make it here? You know, because I got passengers with me. I should tell you this, too. Like, early in my active addiction, early in my life, I met a really cool chick that most of you know, Natalie. It was in 7th and 8th grade, and then we parted ways. She went on and grew up, and I continued to, like, bust her along, you know. And, you know, she's not an addict, but she's very into, like, the spirituality of our program and supports me. Like, I'm around people outside the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to support me in my recovery, too, today, you know. And it's awesome to have somebody in my life today that, like, we don't, like, we depend on each other, but we don't, like, We're standalone too. Like, we're good in our own shoes, in our own, you know, in our own skins, I should say. I should mention, like, I mean, if you want to, like, was taught of me, like, I did get a home group. I got a sponsor right away. I worked steps. I restarted steps after I relapsed. I didn't get into that. Kind of bouncing around, apologize, a little nervous. I think it's all the Halloween candy, the relapse. I mean, I relapsed once in my life. I tried to stop using thousands of times. I relapsed once because I didn't count all the other times because I really wasn't about nothing. I didn't work a program at all. I was really trying to work a program, and about a year, about 6 months into my recovery around December of 2009, I decided to drink a couple beers. It's an important part of my message. I think I should share it. I thought, wow, this dude never could drink two beers and stop, you know? I was the kind of guy, like, on this tonight we turn back the clocks, right? An hour. I'd be that guy at the bar going, you know, all year long I'd be waiting for this night because I'd get one more hour at the bar. I'd be like, don't close the bar. You got to turn the clock back at 1 o'clock. You know, I get one more. That was me. You know, I don't have to live like that today. It's awesome. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with all that. But, like, the relapse, you know, it was just two beers and then I thought I could control it. And then I did that. Two or three times, four times, didn't really get drunk. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to be able to do this with my drug of choice. So I started going back to that. One thing I did do, and I listened to you guys, I said, I kept coming back. I came back high. People would be like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm just tired. You know, and they heard that from me for a long time. Finally, somebody had the courage enough to call me on the phone. I came to a particular question. I don't know why I was still doing step work, getting high, but I felt like that was instilled in me. So I was doing. Came to a question that made me turn it over and get honest and become more fully surrendered to this process. You know, so thank God people didn't say, you're high, get out of here. You know, that's why, like, when I see people coming in and they relapse or get high, you know, hey man, at least you're here, you've got an hour clean when you're sitting here if you're not using while you're here, you know. So, like, that's cool with me for today, you know. And I don't know, people that number thing, I got used to doing that at retreats. I did the one, I think it's Christ, the one in May, the Twin Echo retreat right down the road here. And lapsed onto another dude that had like 7 years clean. He stuck with me, you know. If you're struggling, grab onto somebody. We're always willing to help. This is the coolest program. We divide our burdens and multiply our joys. That was a foreign concept to me. Like, one addict helping another is without parallel. And it's actually, we both get better by doing that. I appreciate it for letting me share my message tonight. Thanks for letting me share.